you know, you have to keep your eye on what's right ahead of you, because if it doesn't work, you fail. But if you don't project and dream and think about the future, then, you know, you don't grow. Some days are building days and some days are driving days. And that's kind of the life of small business and being an entrepreneur. And I think remembering that is paramount.
Some of your favorite vintage finds might have come from a long search through a flea market. My next guest is helping to make that search for the perfect piece a bit easier. Welcome to Small Business Stories presented by Vistaprint. My name is Jeff Israel. Joining me today via Skype is the founder and CEO of Flea Style, Brittany Cobb. Brittany, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I would love to hear your take and your explanation on what Flea Style is.
Oh, Jeff, how much time do you have?
We have all day.
Okay, good. Well, Flea Style, we celebrate 10 years in business. So it's come a long way from a grassroots flea market. But today I like to say that we are a small business championing small businesses in unique style. And we do that through a lot of ways. We still have our giant pop-up markets that we originally started 10 years ago. But in addition, we've now rolled out lots of other platforms to support our makers and local small businesses, and that includes workshops and event space. Today, we even have a restaurant where we're bringing in their biscotti and local bread. So we're doing a lot, but everything comes back to offering, you know, lifestyle goods and cool places for people to connect and enjoy the small business community.
Very cool. And you currently have two physical locations, correct?
So we have two brick and mortar stores. One's in downtown Dallas. It's 5,000 square feet. And one is now in Frisco, Texas, which is about 30 minutes north of Dallas. And that's 6,200 square feet. So we're taking really big footprints to show off what we do.
And if someone comes into a Flea Style location, what do they see? What's it like? Take us through that process.
Say it's kind of like maybe an anthropology meets local five and dime. Everything is organically styled throughout, so it's not going to feel like a flea market with stalls, but everything is from a local small business or a business curating unique goods from all over the world. So our tagline is handmade, vintage, one of a kind. And so we're offering everything from, you know, a one-off piece of art to handmade jewelry. And they're beautifully styled. Everything's merchandised in a really unique way. We take things that I find at flea markets to show off our goods. And yeah, I mean, they're just like a beautiful bazaar, very bohemian, layered, and made with a lot of love. And the coolest part is we tell our makers and vendors stories throughout. So there's signage talking to you about this small business, who they are and where they're from, to what they're currently listening to and like their favorite, you know, joke or something fun. We want you to get to know these people you're supporting.
I love that. And I can see that ethos come through even in your own website. But I wanted to take a step back first, because one of the things that caught my eye about Flea Style is my grandparents and parents had a stall at a local flea market. So this is super interesting to me. And I wanted to hear about how this idea came about or where your love for this style of business came about.
Yeah, well, my story sounds pretty similar to yours then. I grew up the same way. It wasn't at a flea market, but my mom had several stalls at antique malls all over our hometown. I'm from Orange County, California, and I'm actually from the city of Orange, which has a very historical, pretty well-known district. And that was my backyard as a child, you know, and where I roamed the aisles while my mom set up her booth, and we went collecting at flea markets and swap meets to find product for her. And so it's all I knew, and I didn't realize how much I loved it until I left my hometown for college, and I moved to Dallas at 18 and went to SMU to be a journalist. They had a great program there, and I went to go shop for things that I needed, whether it was for my dorm or, you know, for my personal wardrobe, and I just found that everything was kind of shiny and new, and that was great, and, you know, we all need something from the Gap or Target, but I also wanted those unique finds, and I just was having a hard time, and so I would have to go to these far-flung corners for this one little thrift store, antique store, but there really wasn't a central spot to shop in Dallas. And so it's a long story, but several years later, after I graduated college, I ended up creating it myself.
That's amazing. And you have almost like a piece of your childhood as part of your daily adult life. What's that like?
Yeah, it's really crazy. I know I'm constantly reminded of things, whether it's like a piece of china we get in that like my mom literally served Thanksgiving dinner on, or, you know, certain smells of vintage coats that I'm always conjuring up memories working here. I love it.
That's great. And I'm sure there's so many people like you or even like me that this is part of their family's history, that this type of shopping, antiquing, flea marketing, even people that may not have sold but go to them as a family. We would have family outings to visit these markets. So I imagine that's something similar to the people and the makers you're working with and also the clientele that come into your shop every day.
Definitely. And what's so neat now, 10 years later, you know, when I started it, it was kind of more for a selfish reason, wanting to shop that way. Also, as a journalist, I was writing about all of these unique people. And so I had them kind of right at my fingertips and wanted to support them more than that one story I was able to write. But, you know, back then, I was a little bit more off center as the way I like to shop. But now, a decade later, it's become really common and, you know, almost seeked out to shop small and for unique goods and to support, you know, local makers, but also to find things that are more unique in style. You know, I think people are more and more comfortable rocking their one of a kind style. And it's been fun to like be ahead of the curve in doing that and offering a place for it. And we're so affordable. And that's been really fun too.
What's it like and how do you find the makers that are make up your shops?
So having done our events for 10 years, you know, they're kind of just a story at this point. So, you know, like I said, as a journalist, I was meeting these people, brought them under one roof, and then it just kept growing and growing. So at this point, we have a database of thousands of makers. And so some make sense for both stores, some make sense for no stores and just our show. I mean, every business is different. What's really cool is, as much as I love to tout local, I'm really big on touting just American made and American makers too. And we now have makers that fly in from all over the country for our events and now are shipping us stuff for our stores. So now we have product from Nashville and Oregon and Rhode Island. And it's really fun to kind of see our footprint spread out and support so many more people.
And when you're making decisions for flea style, are you thinking of those decisions with the maker in mind or potentially with the customers that would come in to visit makers in terms of what the stores look like and things you offer? How does that all operate? Because you almost have two end customers in mind.
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of both. One thing that is really unique about flea style is we're not usually not buying product. So we work with our vendors on a consigning standpoint. We're a small business ourselves, and especially getting into retail kind of, not randomly, but, you know, without having that real experience. We've only been in retail a year and a half. I went in with a toe kind of halfway in the water, not sure how it would operate, and definitely didn't have the capital to buy all the products. So our vendors have to succeed to want to stay with us because we're not paying for it up front. We're paying for it once it sells. Mm-hmm. So I think the maker first and foremost, because I want them to succeed. I want them to stay in, you know, good standing with us, and I want to see them crush it. So then that also flips the narrative to, well, what are people going to want to buy? And so I'm obviously thinking of that end user too.
I love it. You mentioned this as well, and a lot of small business owners, one of their aspirations is to open a brick and mortar location. What are some of the things you've learned by doing this and that you didn't even expect that you would have to know or have to do?
Oh, Jeff, it's so hard. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Retail is tough. And I say that being, you know, what I would say is semi-successful. It's just so difficult. The retail climate is just kind of weird right now. People aren't really sure where it's going. Most people are not opening stores. They're going more online or they're selling straight from social media. That's hard for us to do, selling one-offs and vintage. But that said, there's so much that goes into retail that people don't realize, from a budgeting and financial standpoint to employees and scaling and just the hours too. I mean, we're open 7 days a week, so there's really no turning it off. Mm-hmm. Then there's restocking product. I mean, it's just a snowball that keeps growing and growing. And so you just have to be really prepared and listen to your customer, number one, because without them, you won't survive.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So you're talking about retail, but also it seems like you do a lot in your locations beyond just the people coming in to buy things. And it seems like you have some more experiences going on in your locations than just the buying and selling. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, I think to make it today in retail, you have to be experiential. You have to have a reason to get someone from behind the screen to walk through your doors. And so we start with the experience of our retail store, the way it looks and smells, and tell stories throughout. But then to take it even a step further, we have event spaces attached to both locations. So they range from 1,000 to 1,500 square feet, which is pretty good size. So you can host, you know, a baby shower, a bridal shower, a private birthday party. And so it brings people through our doors constantly. And it also brings people through our doors that might be there for the event, not even knowing about retail. So it's kind of created this neat halo effect that brings us customers kind of through osmosis. And then in Frisco, we just also added a restaurant. So if you recall, like in the old antique malls, at least of my childhood, there was always a tea room in the back. And it was typically a little couple of old ladies selling, you know, sandwiches and local cookies or their homemade iced tea. And I wanted to take that and elevate it and modernize it. And so we opened Heirloom Hall. And Heirloom is kind of my take on the casual modern tea room. And it's been a really big success, only 2 weeks in here in Frisco. And it will open in our Dallas location next year. And so it offers yet another reason to kind of come, hang out, linger. And then also it funnels, you know, to our event spaces, offering catering. So it's just kind of this really neat halo that keeps people hanging out at Flea Style.
I love it. And it's funny you mentioned that. I can still remember the smells. Our flea market had a fried dough stand, and I can still smell it every time, the exact type of fried dough. And it still sort of brings me back to a dose of childhood. Now, does Heirloom Hall, is that another opportunity for you to work with makers in the food space? Or is this going to be sort of like a set staff and menu?
No, 100% we're working with makers. So it is a set menu. It's salads, sandwiches, tea sandwiches, shared plates like charcuterie and so forth. But our bread is from our local purveyor, Empire Bakery. Our biscotti is from a local mom, Lula Made Biscotti. Even our wine program, you know, Texas doesn't have the best wine. We have some good wines, but the wines that we've selected are from families with stakes in California wineries. There's actually a distributor here that solely works with those families. So we've really tried to leverage local when we can, and then everything is pretty much farm to table.
I wanted to talk to you about something too, that another thing that a lot of businesses and small businesses in particular, more in their infancy, go through, but that time when you need to hire your first employee. Now, I know you have several employees and you've been in business for 10 years. What was that situation like, and how did you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I still remember it clear as day, and it took several years. I mean, I've been in business 10 years, but I didn't hire my first employee for this company until almost 5 years in. So I understand small business owners in that position. And I would first say, you know, you're going to know. You're going to know when you literally can't do it anymore on your own, and you have to take that leap. I think before then, you should hold off, because it's expensive. It kind of changes everything. You're all of a sudden now a mentor and in charge of someone's life and livelihood and success. There's a lot of pressure with that. That said, when you're ready, it can change your company. And for me, it really helped catapult me. And I hired my second employee within 2 months. It was obvious that we were doing something right with the right amount of people and the right people, people that were offering skills and opportunities that I didn't have. Find somebody that is complimenting you and how you like to run your business, but also challenging you and also offering the skills and things you need that you can't do. I'm really very visual and creative, but I am not a graphic designer. I do not know how to translate things looking pretty digitally. So finding somebody that could do that for me was paramount. And as soon as we did, I mean, we just completely were a firecracker after that and shot out with so much more opportunity because I looked bigger and better and had someone leveraging all the ideas in my head. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard bringing other people into your dream and your business and your life. And you got to really take it seriously. And, you know, if you're offering a salary, also think about unemployment. Like, there's so many things that happen. I would recommend talking to a lot of people before you hire your first person.
That makes total sense. You talked a lot about, too, your brand. And I think if anyone were to visit your website, and I'm assuming your locations as well, your brand is very clear. How would you describe Flea Style's brand?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that is a huge compliment. It's hard, you know, building a brand. I think for me, the beauty in having a journalism career is I'm really on point with tone and voice and the way things should look and sound and smell even. I mean, everything, it matters to me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I hope when you would read something, whether it's the way we talk on Instagram, which is still solely me, or on our website, you're going to hear that same girl speaking, and that same way we talk is the way we dress, and the same way our graphics look. For Fleestyle, that is it. The bookends with me, and I'm a California, Texas girl, so it's a very bohemian kind of country flair, I would say. And that is a reflection of the way I live my life. And so it's a real natural extension for me every day. But it took a few years to get there and find like what colors represent that and what fonts, you know, how, what do we say? What don't we say? Do we talk about certain things? Do we not? Do I show my children? You know, all of that builds a real brand, and that's through staying consistent, staying true to your roots and sticking to your guns. And I think the advice for people like trying to nail that on the head is that if your business is, you know, a reflection of you, you know, you have to be true to that.
For sure. Great advice. You're huge on social media, especially Instagram. And something you just mentioned was that you still run the Instagram. So tell me a bit about your philosophy on social, how important Instagram is to you. And then I just love to hear, you know, as you keep expanding and growing, you know, why you still feel so passionate about posting to Instagram yourself.
Yeah, you know, I've tried to take a step back from it, not because I don't like it or it's overwhelming, but, you know, the more we grow, the more on my plate. And it's like, what I'm constantly looking at, what can I offload on someone else to get out of the weeds? Mm-hmm. And every time I try to get rid of social media, it just doesn't translate. And I think that's because I am the brand. And so that's a bigger conversation as we grow to a point where I literally can't do it anymore. But to me, it's just so paramount to stay honest on it and speak from my heart. I don't pre-plan anything. I don't use Planoly, or I've tried all of that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I just have to post what's on my heart at the moment. And that's what always performs the best. One piece of advice I'd give your listeners is that for a few years early on in the transition of Fleestyle, I should say that our company 10 years ago was called the Dallas Flea when it was just a little flea market. And 5 years in, I rebranded it and made it more of a national play. But when I did that, you know, at the end of the day, we are all about our makers. They're the backbone of what we do. Without them, we are nothing. And so for years, I wanted to make it about them and tell their stories. But I found that the minute I put myself as the face and showed a real leader for the makers and kind of a brand ambassador, that's when our company took off. And so I think for people struggling with that, like I did, you know, you don't want to put yourself in the limelight, or it's a little awkward or uncomfortable. It's like you kind of got to get past that. And in doing so and being the leader, you actually support so many more people and your brand, because there's a real, you know, kind of hierarchy, and they know who to follow and what that voice sounds like.
That makes total sense to me. And is Instagram your social media channel of choice?
Oh, 100%.
And what do you like about Instagram better than some of the other channels out there?
I think being a visual company and a real visual brand, we have so much eye candy to share. It's just such an easy platform to upload to. I also really love stories. I love to get on and show the behind the scenes. We have so much happening at all times, and there's just so much to share. And, you know, you don't want to always put that on the main feed. So having the option to flip to stories and talk about the new chef we hired for Heirloom Hall, or behind the scenes of making this new tea sandwich we're trying, or yesterday we just talked about a new sweet potato latte. And it's like, you know, just such a quick and easy, very effortless place to connect with people.
So looking back at 10 years in business, which is a huge milestone in itself and something that you should celebrate, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned during that time?
I think you can't do it alone. So if that is your choice to be a really small business and maybe it's more of a side hustle, that's one thing. But if you really want to grow a company or a brand, you have to have help, because the minute you find the right support, really big things can happen. I think being nimble and able to pivot really quickly is important. I love the term fail fast. You know, try things. Don't be afraid to kind of put your neck out there or do something that, you know, you're curious about. But if it doesn't work, pivot pretty quickly and don't be ashamed of it, but take it as a learning lesson and move on to the next thing. I think a lot of times people just keep doing the same thing over and over when it's not working, and then that's when they'll fail. And it's okay to kind of give up and move on. I also think just, you know, you got to keep your head down and work really hard. I always say that you just have to work harder than everyone else. But I could talk for hours on advice. I mean, I've learned a lot, but those are some key points for sure.
I'm sure you can. And what you just gave is pretty great stuff. Now, we're 10 years in, you have two locations, restaurants opening. If we are, say, recording this in 2029 and the 20-year anniversary of Fleestyle is coming up, what are your hopes and dreams for the company in terms of how Fleestyle can grow, if you want it to grow, where you want it to grow, and what are some things that are on your roadmap?
I'm definitely a planner and a dreamer, so I've thought about this, but at the same time, I'm also trying to get the second location, you know, up and running. Some very big mentors of mine have told me if you can make it with two locations, you can take it to 20, but the 1 to 2 is the biggest growth spurt and the hardest. And so I am in the thick of the storm right now. We are only open now 2 weeks. So, you know, it's hard to say because right now I just want to run away. But I would say in 20 years, I would love to have more locations, not a lot, but a few more. And then really the growth pattern I see for Fleestyle is in a wholesale capacity. So, you know, like I said, the makers mean the world to us and where we want to pour our love and energy. And so I believe that Fleestyle is bigger than Texas and that, yeah, yes, you can buy a little online, but like we've talked about, it's not easy online. And so how do we leverage our makers and sell them all over? And I believe that's through a wholesale line where people can buy Fleestyle at wholesale for boutiques all over the country and maybe even the world. It's very hard to buy local, passionately made goods or, you know, retail boutiques everywhere. You tend to go to market and buy what everyone else does. Mm-hmm. And so we would like to be that place for people that have a store in, you know, Miami or LA or a little town in Arkansas and want something special in addition to the new merchandise. So we're really working towards that. It's a little ways out. It's a lot of work. You know, we're not working with big manufacturers. These are people that sometimes it's their side hustle or they're just starting out. They don't know how to scale. So we have, you know, a lot of challenges ahead of us, but I'm really willing to work through them because I believe in it. And I think the shopper out there will freak out if we figure it out.
Now, I love that you have, you know, your eye on the prize right now in terms of location number two, making sure this all goes well. But it's really a great and refreshing to hear that you have your eyes and vision in the future as well. And just making sure that, you know, everything's set and working well currently. But what are you working towards? I think that's a really, really cool approach to running a small business.
You know, you have to keep your eye on what's right ahead of you, because if it doesn't work, you fail. But if you don't project and dream and think about the future, then, you know, you don't grow. So it's a combination always. And some days are building days and some days are driving days. And I think being really cognizant of that, okay, today I had to fix an ice machine and Sonos wasn't working and I had to work on the alarm. Like, this literally was my yesterday. Oh. And it feels like you're taking 10 steps back. But then you have a call like today where you're able to share your story with hopefully a lot of people and move forward. And that's kind of the life of small business and being an entrepreneur. And I think remembering that is paramount.
I love it. And just sort of wrapping up now, I wanted to talk a little bit. We talked a lot about your website, your Instagram, your stores. You have a podcast. If people want to find out more about Fleestyle and also you, Brittany, where can they find all of that good stuff?
Yeah, we have a podcast called Fridays with Fleestyle, and every Friday we air a story of a small business owner, entrepreneur, dreamer making waves. We've had everyone from Sarah Michelle Gellar talking about starting her brand Foodstirs to local players that we believe are real rock stars. So it's really fun. It helps me kind of rev up my journalism chops again, which I miss, and also just help, you know, tell the stories of these people doing really big things in their own way.
Awesome. And what are your social handles if people want to get a little bit more of a visual look into what's going on at Fleestyle?
Yeah, our Instagram is just at Fleestyle, Flea like flea market, F-L-E-A. And then our restaurant is at Heirloom Hall. Hall is H-A-U-L, a play on trailer or like a flea market hall. And our websites are fleestyle.com and heirloomhall.com. And yeah, those are the best places to check out what we're doing. And I have a blog that I update every single week with a real behind the scenes look at what's going on here. I'm an open book. I believe in letting everyone see what it takes to run a small business. And so they can also check that out.
Awesome. Brittany, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today about your store, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom in that regards. And I think people will get a ton of information, both practical and inspirational, out of your story. So thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Small Business Stories is presented by Vistaprint. For more advice on running your business, visit the ideas and advice section on Vistaprint.com or follow Vistaprint on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you know a business we should feature on Small Business Stories, email us at podcast@vistaprint.com.